Over these past few weeks, well, I know we've been studying Joseph in the morning, but we've, on some of the occasions at least, we have sought to bring a word to you that would encourage you. We spoke the other week of the psalmist feeling like a bottle in the smoke, and we explained that, the bottle being the camel's body, being a flexible thing that was used for carrying water, and it was hung up outside the tent, and the smoke would eventually dry it out, and it would become hard. And when the psalmist became like a bottle in the smoke, his spirit was broken, and he'd become dry, and he was in the danger of becoming hard as well. And he looked to the Lord, but he did say in that verse in the psalm, "But I have remembered thy precepts." He remembered the word that the Lord had given unto him, and that made all of the difference for him. And we know that as you have labored during this past year for the Lord here in Achillea, and maybe in other places too, in your work and other things that you're involved in, sometimes when we look upon what we do, it's very easy to become discouraged and think, well, more and more, nobody wants to listen, and certainly very few want to respond to the message that we have. And it is very easy these days for the Christian to become discouraged. So as I thought of the final message on a Sunday morning of this year, I didn't really know for a while what to speak upon. I know that next Sunday morning, God willing, we bring a message of encouragement, and that we hope it will help you as we enter another year. But as I came to the end of this year, I wanted to deal again with something that I felt as a minister, and I don't know everything, far from it. I don't know everything about you either. But to deal with something that I felt a lot of people would know something about. And I decided to deal with frustration. Now, you know something about that. And certainly if you're involved in God's work for any length of time, sooner or later you're going to know all about it in frustration. And we're looking here at Moses, a man who immediately, when you think of him, frustration might not be the first thing that comes to your mind. You think of brilliant leader, and he was that. You think of a man who knew God face to face and had power with God as few men ever had. He had all of that, but he also had frustration. And as we break into this chapter in verse 11, Moses has shown his integrity, because he has, in a sense, disinherited himself from all that could have been his in Egypt. Not many men would have done it then, and even fewer will do it today. He turned his back upon the power and upon all the wealth and the privileges that would have been his in Egypt, that were already his in some degree. But ultimately, he would have probably been the top man in the process of time. He wanted to identify himself with his own people. And this was something which he looked forward to. I'm not sure how they felt about it. And as he left the palace, his one great ambition, I have no doubt, was to make it known to his countrymen that he was the man that would deliver them. Now, he was the Lord's man, and he was the Lord's choice. And he obviously was convinced that God had chosen him to be the emancipator of those oppressed people. He'd been given a very, very good education in diplomacy and also in military strategy and all of those things which, humanly speaking, may have appealed to the children of Israel. But he needed more than that. And Moses, intellectual as he was, godly man as he was, as we find him in verse 11 of chapter 2 in Exodus, he still had things to learn. And as we look at these verses, I see Moses frustrated, because he would learn that his education and his strategy, his ability, his natural leadership ability, all of those things. Now, I was going to say a natural speaker, but he wasn't that. Aaron was a far better speaker than Moses, but the Lord chose Moses to do the speaking. And that should encourage us as well. In whatever we do, the Lord chooses the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And we see that in Moses, for we see him frustrated. And as you think on this last Sunday morning of 2010, as you think of your service for the Lord, maybe you've been a bit frustrated. Maybe you are now. I want you to notice some points here then regarding this frustration. Notice first of all that when Moses set out to serve the Lord among his own people, he had very high hopes. Look at verse 11 and 12. It came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens. Of course, that was a good thing. And he spied an Egyptian smiting in Hebrew, one of his brethren, and he looked this way and that way. And when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. He took a drastic course of action here almost immediately. He had come outside the palace. Well, when you look at this situation, you can say that Moses had a really deep-seated care for the people. You have to be impressed by that. He had a deep-seated care for his own people here. He looked on his brethren's burdens. And then he saw this Egyptian boy dealing harshly with the Hebrew, probably giving him a hiding for nothing, or next to nothing. And he didn't like it. And his heart was heavy as he looked upon it. And he was greatly concerned, but he took an absolutely drastic course of action. And he killed the Egyptian. There was evident care here. And bearing that in mind, I just want to read a verse for you that's found over in the book of Galatians, chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, it says there in verse 2, and this is something that we want to bear in mind as we seek to work for the Lord, and we look at each other, and one lady here is doing this, and the gentleman there is doing that, and the minister's trying to preach, and somebody else is doing something else. It says there in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. That emphasizes the importance of bearing each other's burdens. You have burdens in the work. If you want to talk to me about them, and I trust if you have burdens in the work, that you will talk to me about them. I'd be more than happy to talk with you. I've talked with people about my burdens in the work. But maybe you have burdens in the work and you haven't really been able to talk to anybody yet. And they're pressing in upon you. And you care greatly for the work and for the people, and yet there are burdens there. For look what it says in verse 3. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. Ties in with what's said in verse 2. In fact, verse 3 shows us that I could be a hindrance to myself by not sharing my burdens. And certainly it could be a hindrance to others by not being willing to bear their burdens as well. And you and I can understand how the man Moses here, how he would be filled with great human compassion. It was human compassion for this man who was being beaten that led to what really was righteous indignation. You and I can understand that. And you say, well, Mr. Salt, if I was in a similar position, if I found somebody hammering one of the older people out of the congregation or hammering someone who was not fit to stand up for themselves, I would take exception to that. And I would stand up for them. And I can understand that. One time we went in Yorkshire to, I can't remember the name of the place now, it was an old prison camp during the war, and there were a lot of pictures there. I would never go back to it because things like that disturbed me to make me bitter and I have to get out. But when you see what things people did to other people, it was horrendous. But most people here would have heard of Bilson Camp, where there were inhuman things committed upon people and children, lying, five or six of them lying starved to death in a bath and all that kind of thing. And there was even a woman known as the Beast of Bilson. She was worse than any of the men. But when Bilson was liberated, when it was liberated, some of the Nazis dressed themselves in prison uniform to try to fit in. But as soon as the Americans came through the gate, there were various of those guards and the weak and almost dead people that were there, the prisoners, they jumped on them and they kicked them to death. And it showed a photograph of the Americans with their back turned. And the prisoners were, they were kicking the Nazi guards to death. Now, I know you and I, we don't have any sympathy for those who had been bad to the prisoners. We don't have any sympathy at all. And you may say, well, I would have done exactly the same thing. Well, I'll leave that with you. But all I want to say is that ties in some degree with the same kind of situation that Moses was in. He had a care for the people. He did care for them. And he took exception to this man's character. But in Moses, certainly in Moses' circumstance, Moses, he responded to injustice, but he was wrong. He was wrong in how far he went in this time. So we have a man here with high hopes. He has evident care for his people and how it is with them, and that is good. But I want you to notice here as well that harm was done through him trying to do right. Harm was done through him trying to do right. I have to say, his response was wrong. The Bible teaches that a murderer should be put to death, and that still stands as far as I'm concerned. But in the situation here, this taskmaster, he didn't even kill the slave, he just beat him. He beat him. So we see here that while his compassion was good, he was already going about this in completely the wrong way. He had a care, and he had a great passion to deliver this man, but he went about it in the wrong way. And you know, as you think, if you're involved in God's work, you come into 2010 with high hopes in what you were doing. And I hope as we soon enter 2011, you've still high hopes. And you came with an evident care for all that you're doing in the work and for God's glory and for the work in general. But as we look at Moses here and learn a lesson from it, it is this. We need to be very careful regarding our methods. We need to be very careful regarding the methods that we use in God's work. Moses was a man of faith. But you'll notice here in this situation, his action wasn't of faith. You'll see in verse 12, he looked this way and that way. He was slipping around. He knew what he was going to do. It was premeditated. And he behaved in a way that was wrong. And as you look out upon the world today, Christian, and as you're aware as I am, that generally speaking, the general public do not want the gospel. They do not want to hear that they're sinners. They do not want to hear a call to repentance. And from the working with the smallest children right up to the ordinary Sunday services, the danger is trying to change our method. Of course, we move with the time. We move with the times and things have changed. But in God's work regarding reaching men and women with the method, with the message of the gospel, it doesn't change. It doesn't change. And I could bring you down any number of places where the methods have changed. And the method of getting people to church has changed. And the message has changed in order to get people into church. And woe betide this congregation or this denomination when we ever get to the point where we wish to be all things to all men, because it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. It will not bring the glory to the Lord. The only one that needs to approve of what we do is the Lord. Of course, you don't go out of your way to cause trouble. But if the Lord approves, then you can get on with it. Over there in Proverbs 24, it says in verse 21, "My son, fear thou the Lord and the king," and listen to it, "and meddle not with them that are given to change. For their calamity shall rise suddenly, and who knoweth the ruin of them both?" You can study a similar theme through the Bible with those who were given to change. Jehoshaphat, at a time, was given to change. He paid a very heavy price. King Asa, the great reformer, in his latter days, was given to change. Again, he paid a very heavy price. And the thing about it is, when these people paid the price, they didn't pay it alone. It affected other people. And there's places today, and the methods have gone. The methods have changed. And the clear and simple presentation of the gospel has gone. Whether it's in our outreach, or in the children's work, or here on a Sunday, even though there's change all around us, brethren and sisters, as you go forth with high hopes, and an evident care and concern for those who are lost, remember this, the message never changes. The only message that can change the heart of men and women is Jesus Christ and Him crucified. So this man went forward with high hopes, but my second thought is this. He would learn not to expect gratitude. Now, of course, among Christians, if somebody gives you something or does something for you, generally speaking, we say thank you. And if you don't say thank you, you've usually forgotten. Not that you're not thankful, because you are. But you see, Moses had to learn he would have to learn not to expect gratitude. If you look there in verse 13 and 14, it says, "And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to him that did the wrong, Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, Surely the thing is known." What he did this second day was right. The two men were fighting and he wanted to split them up. He didn't like to see them. He intervened here and he was right to do that. But he learned here very quickly that not only did these men not appreciate what he was doing just there and then, but they didn't in any way appreciate what he'd done the day before. Yes, he did it for their sake. They didn't appreciate it. They're casting it here in his face. In fact, we read about that in the New Testament in Acts chapter 7, it says in verse 23, this is concerning Moses. It says in verse 22, he was learned in all the wisdom of Egypt, and he was mighty in words and deeds. He was a formidable man. And then he went out to his own. It says, "And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him, and avenged him that was oppressed, and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. But they understood not. And the next day he showed himself unto them as they strove, and would have set them at one again, saying, Sirs, ye are brethren, why do ye this wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbour wrong thrust him away, saying, Who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Thou kill me as thou didst the Egyptian yesterday. Then fled Moses at that saying, and was a stranger in the land of Midian, where he begat two sons." He had to learn that he would not receive gratitude. And of course, when we look at this situation in Moses' life, it was part of the Lord's training for him. You'll notice here that this man showed great anger whenever he spoke to Moses. Moses had been trying to split them up. This was actually a very friendly reproof. It was an act of kindness. Moses wasn't showing contempt to the brethren here. He didn't want to see them fighting. But not only was there no gratitude for him, or towards him, there was no respect either. There was no respect either. He was having to learn that he would be looked upon as nobody. And he was having to learn that what he did would not be appreciated. It was a real, you could say it was a real eye-opener for him. And if you look there at verse 14, he's so shaken by the whole thing. It says in verse 14, towards the end, it says there, Moses feared and said, "Surely the thing is known." He's filled now with fear. Do you remember what we read in Acts 7, supposing that his brethren would have understood how God by his hand would deliver them, and they understood not? This was something that he would have to put up with continually. You know the story of how he eventually went to deliver Israel, and how he began to try to do his best for them, and almost at every turn they opposed him. I think I mentioned last week Korah and those others. And such was the blindness and the self-will of others that whenever Korah died, they said, "They've killed the people of the Lord." That was when the Lord killed Korah, took them away. They said, "They've killed the people of the Lord." What a frustrating time it would be for Moses. He wanted to do his best for them. And yet they looked upon rebels like Korah and his company as the people of the Lord. Those who were doing a great work and deserved respect and so on. So you can see here that the Lord is teaching Moses a very important lesson. This man understood him so much, he took him and he really, if you like, he tore him in shreds. And he says, "Are you going to kill me the way you killed that boy yesterday?" You and I can understand how Moses would be frustrated, as he would be learning here not to expect appreciation, not to expect respect, and to expect rejection. And dear Christian, as you seek to serve the Lord this year, and as I mentioned, you're like Moses, your hopes are high, you have a great care for those that are lost, and you go out to do that, While people in some degree may express appreciation for what you do, and some do that, many will not. You learned that this year regarding the village here. So many people were reached when it come to the mission. Yes, there were some who come, but there were very, very many who didn't. Regarding children's work as well. The work in McGabbery with the children is a case in point. So many, when there are other things on, they are simply not interested in coming. And why I'm saying this to you this morning is this. I don't want you to lose heart and to lose hope simply because people do not appreciate what you do. All I say to you is this. Get used to it. Get used to it. And as far as respect is concerned, the world is respecting the Christian and Christianity less and less. And learn about rejection. Learn to expect rejection. Be like Moses. Learn to expect ingratitude, rejection, and disrespect. Because the work is God's. And we're not doing it ultimately for man. We're doing it for the Lord. And we need to be looking to Him. Because if we don't, we will become discouraged. Just being human like anyone else. And when you're faced with ingratitude time after time after time, you'll begin to lose heart. But notice something else about Moses here in his frustration. Not only had he high hopes to begin with that were dashed, but he learned then to expect ingratitude and disrespect. But notice also that any threat to take ground from Satan will not go unchallenged. Any threat to take ground from Satan will not go unchallenged. Look at verse 15. It says, "Now when Pharaoh heard this thing," that is, what Moses had done and so on, "he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well." Pharaoh is enraged. He's not bothered about his servant, the taskmaster, the one that Moses killed and buried in the sand. Just a number to him. A wee bit like some armies today, as far as the government is concerned. "Oh, we're awful sorry, and we hope this never happens again. Thank you very much. Your 18-year-old son's dead, and that's it," or whatever the case might be. So it would have been in Pharaoh's day. Pharaoh wasn't concerned. He wasn't enraged because of the murder of his taskmaster. He had plenty more of them. But rather, he saw this action of Moses as a threat to Pharaoh himself. He knew of Moses' ability. He knew that he knew all about Egypt. And he knew that if Moses could get a following, he could instigate an uprising that would threaten the stability of his throne. That's what he was worried about. He was worried about losing ground. He saw Moses as a danger. And therefore, even though he'd reared up Moses, or he had Moses in the palace from his earliest days, he now saw his life. He saw a threat, you see, to his own situation. And there's lessons from that for us. And one of them is this. If you're seeking to make inroads for the Lord, do you remember, as it says in Acts 17 concerning God's servants, they were referred to as those that had turned the world upside down. You begin to make inroads for God in any community, sometimes even in a family, and you will know what it is to be on the receiving end of anger. And you will find that the devil has people in places you didn't imagine he had them. And he will use those people. And he will oppose you as you seek to win others to the Lord. We can say also here that the enemy will go to great lengths. This man Pharaoh did not want Moses talked to or rebuked, but rather he sought his life. He wanted him killed. Remember Stephen? I think we mentioned him a few weeks ago here in the church. He had a great desire for souls, care for the people, but he was a straight talker. And as he was talking to them, telling them how it was with them, they shut their ears as they ran upon him, and they took his life. They took his life. That shows us the great length that they would go to. Now, when you think of our own country here, people may not do that, but they may ignore your every and best effort for the Lord. Ignore your every effort for the Lord, because every bit of ground you seek to win for the Lord and to snatch from the devil's grasp, you will be opposed. It would be altogether unusual if the work was not. But I also want to say that the Christians should be encouraged when they see a people unsettled. You know, sometimes the very best gospel missions that people can have is when you go around the community and people slam the door in your face and they call you names and they say things to you that are very hurtful, and you go to the mission and you think, well, there's nobody coming here. Nobody coming here. It is very often at times like that that the Lord moves in great power. And you want to take encouragement for that. Because as you have discovered, working around the general area here, people be very polite and very pleasant and never come. And never come. So we have to ask the question, was Moses mistaken that God would deliver Israel through him? No, he wasn't mistaken. But Moses wasn't ready for the task. I don't know, whatever you're involved in God's work, you have a burden for souls. The Lord has already blessed you in some degree. Perhaps in some way or another, you face the ingratitude and the disrespect. And that has discouraged you a little bit as well. But remember this, God's work has always been opposed. Moses would face it for years and years and years. He would face it here, first of all, from Pharaoh. His life was in danger. Notice something else, and I have to move on here quickly. We ask the question now, as at this point, why was he frustrated? You see, as Moses did not know exactly how God was going to deliver those who were in bondage, he thought it was his responsibility to work it out for himself. We refer to this as zeal without knowledge. Zeal without knowledge. Moses wasn't stupid, but he didn't know the Lord's will in this. And he was jealous, there's no question about that. He was the Lord's servant. And he looks to himself and he begins to rely upon self and think, now what should I do? You see, there would have been so much placed at his disposal in Egypt that he was his own man, and generally speaking, he could have made the decisions. And now he goes out to fight to work for the Lord among his own people, and he thinks it's going to be the same. It's not going to be the same, because he's going to be a disappointment to himself. We can say there, when we look at him, that he moved an impulse because he acted out of human sympathy. We can understand that. And it is good to have human sympathy, but brethren and sisters, having a sympathetic heart will never be enough in serving the Lord. It will never be enough, because your sympathy will be crushed as you're met with disappointment. And remember, all through the years, Moses, when he was doing his best, everything was his fault. They come to him and they railed on him about silly things that they should have had more sense than to moan about. But they always came and they laid it at his door. Time after time after time, he was provoked. And the Bible tells us very much about the difficult time that he had even with the children of Israel. He was to learn that pity wasn't enough. But he was also to learn that God's determined purpose for the people was what counted. Was what counted. And you and I would want to labour. Yes, we do have pity. And we do have compassion. But we seek to win men and women to Jesus Christ because we know that it pleases God through the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. That's why. It is his purpose that men and women will be converted. He has a people that will be called out for his name. God has his people, and it is your responsibility and mine to go out and to reach men and women, to bring as many as possible under the preaching of the word. If we rely on our feeling of pity, it'll not last. It'll not last. Because a few discouragements deals with your pity when it comes to working out among the wider world. And we want to pray to that end, that the Lord would give us his zeal, but the Lord would give us wisdom as well, and help us to keep doing it, doing things for God in God's way, and with knowing that God has an ultimate purpose for his people. We can see there regarding Moses here that he also he was frustrated because he acted out of impulse and human pity. We can also see here that he was rushing ahead of God because he was keen. It would be very unfair to pour cold water upon someone's zeal. Now, I know some people have done that many a time. But it's very unfair to do that. If a person is zealous, it is far better that they're instructed in some way that they can channel that zeal. And certainly you do not want to go and dampen someone's zeal. You don't want to do that. Well, here was a man who was rushing ahead of the Lord because he was keen. But it's very important to notice here, brethren and sisters, that Moses at this time was not sensitive to God's timing. He was not sensitive to God's timing. How hard it is to be patient in the work of the Lord. We know all about it, and so do you. How hard it is to be patient. And impatience can cause foolish, hasty decisions. That was the case with Moses. If you look with me there, please, in Psalm 103. Psalm 103, it says there, this was what Moses had to learn. Look what it says. This is concerning the Lord and Moses in verse 7. He made known his ways unto Moses, his acts unto the children of Israel. He made known his ways unto Moses. He was beginning to make known his ways to Moses now, but Moses didn't know it all. And he made mistakes. But you know something, even though he made mistakes, it wasn't the end of him. And if you've made a mistake, remember, God hasn't finished with you yet. Get back up and start again. Look to the Lord and ask, cry to God for wisdom. But what a benefit it was to Moses when the Lord made known his ways to him. When you consider the mammoth task that he had, where would he have been if God hadn't made known to him his ways? If he'd been left to himself, as he was trying to do here, he was going to rush ahead. He was acting with great zeal, but no wisdom, or very little wisdom, and no knowledge of God's will at that time. He wasn't sensitive to God's timing. And yet we can say that he had to learn that at best he was weak. Moses was too strong for the Lord when he came out of Egypt. You know, sometimes the Lord has to wait until we're weak enough before he can use us. Yes, he did have some degree of courage to tackle the taskmaster. Having been the head of Egypt's military forces, he knew all about deliverance by force. He was a man who knew a lot about the strength of human ability. But he had to learn. And remember this, folks, we all have to learn to rely totally upon the Lord's strength. It's called dying to self. Dying to your own desires and ambitions. Dying to any notion that we may have that we're up to the task, and relying totally upon the Lord. Now, it took a further 40 years. Seems a long time. It took a further 40 years for Moses to learn this. Out in the backside of the desert, looking after his father-in-law's sheep, the Lord was dealing with him. The Lord was teaching him through everyday instances. The Lord was working in him in a way that would make him ready for the task of delivering Israel. Again there in Psalm 77. Psalm 77, verse 20. Look what it says here concerning the children of Israel. Thou leadest thy people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. He would become almost like the hand of God. Now, he could not be compared to the hand of God when he killed the Egyptian. Could not be compared to the hand of God when he was rushing ahead of the Lord. Could not be compared to the hand of God when he was relying on his own strength. And whatever you're doing for the Lord in 2011, remember this, you can lean upon him. You can lean upon him. When your pity goes and frustration sets in, remember that he has a purpose. When the strength you think you have lets you down, remember you lean upon him. You lean upon him in the work. And Moses was learning to do that. He would have to learn to know God's purpose and to totally rely upon him to empower him. And Paul was writing to the church at Colossians. I'll read this for you. It's chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1 says there in verse 27, to whom God would make known that what is the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory, whom we preach, warning every man and teaching every man in all wisdom, that we may present every man perfect in Jesus Christ. Whereunto I also labour, striving according to his working, which worketh in me mightily. Paul was a weak man. He learned that. But it says here that God worked in him mightily. And what God did for Paul, he can do for you, Christian, in 2011. So don't let your weakness hold you back from serving the Lord. But don't let any misconception you may have about your ability allow you to make the mistake that Moses made. And he was relying here upon self. There's one other thing about it here, about this situation where we see him frustrated. I go through them again. He was frustrated because he'd acted out of human sympathy, and it didn't work. He was rushing ahead of God because he was keen. He had to learn how weak he was at best. But notice also what men thought was very, very important to Moses at this time. And that's another reason why God did not use him at that time. If you look there again in Exodus chapter 2 and verse 12, it says there, and he looked this way and that and so on. He's looking around him to see who is watching. You see, he was very apprehensive when there were others around. He was concerned an awful lot about what men thought. If you're going to serve the Lord in 2011, well, as I said, I think it's foolish to go out looking for trouble. And if you want to pick fights with people, well, it's very easy to do that. There's always plenty of people to fight with you. But if you want to just serve the Lord, and yes, you're not going to back down on important things at all. But if you want to serve the Lord, you're going to have to learn. We're going to have to learn not to worry too much about what people think. Have a mission, and if they don't come, then have another mission. Or have a children's meeting, and then if they don't come, have another children's meeting. And keep on going and keep on laboring for the Lord. You see, in God's will, Moses would be encouraged. And he learned. He learned to be patient. He learned to lean upon God. He learned to mistrust self. He learned to look beyond pity and look for God's purpose. He learned to look beyond what men thought, because it seemed at times that the weight upon his shoulders was far beyond unbearable, and yet he was able to keep going. Why? Because he learned. As you find him here in Exodus chapter 2, he's a very frustrated man. And I want to read just a couple of verses here as we draw to a close. There's one in Joshua chapter 1. I'll read it for you. It says in verse 9, the Lord here was talking to Joshua, who came after Moses. He said, Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. You know, when the Lord was talking to young Joshua, it almost sounds like some of the words that Paul spoke to young Timothy. Let no man despise thy youth. Stir up the gift of God that was in thee. Timothy had become downcast at one stage. People perhaps had despised him because he was young. And the Lord here saying to Moses, to Joshua, be not dismayed, neither be afraid. I believe Joshua was afraid. In fact, church historians tell that when Joshua was confronted with his task, that he fell with his face in the dust and didn't want to do it. Didn't want to do it. God's work is never going to get any easier, brethren and sisters. But remember, as God was with Moses, he'll be with us. And let's not fear too much. Yes, we don't be rude to people. And we don't go out looking for trouble. But let's not get too worried about how the world reacts to what we do for the Lord. Because remembering this, that our work for God is not in vain. We shall reap in due season if we faint not. If you look at this passage, you see in Moses who fled. He still had a whole lot to learn. He was a very frustrated man. And how easy it is in these days to be in a similar situation to him. I don't wish to keep repeating things and going over and over and over here what I said this morning, but I just want to highlight the main points. He had high hopes. He had great care there. It was dash. He had to learn that he would be faced with ingratitude. You'll have to learn that too. He also here, any threat to Satan's kingdom will be opposed. Expect it. Don't expect the devil to sit back and give you an easy time if you're winning souls to the Lord. Why was he frustrated? He was frustrated because he acted on human sympathy alone. Because he was rushing ahead with an imperfect knowledge of God's time and will. Because he was leaning on self, because he was a greatly trained man and so on. And because he was a man who was very concerned about what other people thought. Everybody in Egypt had their eye on him. Expected it to be the same now. Worried about what people thought. And I trust as we enter another year soon, if you're frustrated, trust that that frustration will be dealt with. That more and more we'll look to the Lord. And I trust as we speak to you next Sunday morning, that you'll be able to identify what we're saying then with what was said today, and that it will encourage us all to continue to serve the Lord in our own day and generation. We're going to turn to hymn 412.